Hey, this is Jim. I am still not here. This is an illusion. Patrick and I are still on a break. We're going to play for you now part two of my appearance on another podcast called Out of Theaters. It's a podcast about old movies. And in this one, I join the hosts, Will Pfeiffer and Billy Culpa, and we talk about This is Spinal Tap. If you didn't hear part one, well, then go back and do that, because it would be ridiculous to come into the movie halfway through. Like some kind of animal. Don't do that. All right. Here is that show.
So Rob Reiner was the director, right? Meathead, right? And he hired a
Meathead.
Actual documentary. Yes.
Playing Marty DeBurgi on camera.
Yes. Right. And I want to say something about that too, but give me a second here. I did not know this until today, that he hired a cinematographer who was actually a documentary cinematographer, not a feature film cinematographer. And the guy had actually done documentaries on like Jimi Hendrix and the Rolling Stones, I think. And so he, you know, a lot of the scenes were improvised, or apparently most of the movie was improvised, and because they wanted to keep it like sort of fresh and as if it was really happening. And so this guy was really good at making it look like a documentary, but apparently he kept asking like, why is this funny? This is just like, this is what bands do. This is how bands act. Like, this is not funny, right? And so he didn't get it at all. But I think that is probably another reason why it works, because it's not like a goofy, funny movie. It's not like, you know, we're taking a road trip and we're going to put on a show. And like, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like,
it never goes
totally played straight.
There's not like, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, right. Right.
You and I read the same articles doing research for this, Jim. But one thing I wanted to share that I sent to Kevin last night was Steven Tyler's response.
Yeah. I saw that too.
I've heard this.
Let's see. What did he say? I have the quote here. I apologize. According to a 1997 interview in Spin Magazine with Aerosmith rhythm guitarist Brad Whitford, quote, "The first time Steven saw it, he did not see any humor in it at all. When the film was released, Aerosmith's most recent album, Rockin' a Hard Place, depicted Stonehenge prominently on its cover." That is so funny.
That's right. And apparently Black Sabbath also didn't think it was funny. And I think this was the Ronnie James Dio Black Sabbath at that point. But they actually had an album with Stonehenge, something to do with Stonehenge. I'm sorry, I don't really know their discography that well, but especially at that era. But apparently it came out like a week before the movie or something, and they got really upset, and they were like, "You stole from us," as if a movie could be produced in a week. right So only furthering sort of the whole conceit of the movie, which is how like dim rock stars,
yes,
maybe,
right? It fits perfectly.
Yes.
And how self-serious,
right?
They are.
Exactly. Completely. But
there's a band out of Philadelphia called None More Black. And until last night, I mean, a lot of their song titles are like Seinfeld jokes. Like you'll see whatever. But it turns out, None More Black, prominent joke in this movie I'd never heard of until, you know, last night.
You look like, you know, black leather. You can see yourself in both sides.
I wouldn't feel so bad.
It's like a black mirror.
So bad.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I think it looks like death.
David,
it looks
death.
Like mourning.
Every movie in every cinema is about death. Death sells.
I think he's right. There's something about this that's so black. It's like, how much more black could this be? And the answer is none. None
is that good?
More black.
See, because I think that's another one, not quite like Goes to 11, but maybe just like the next notch down, 10, where it's just become part of the American vernacular, right? People will say, you know, it's none more black. And it's just something that maybe you haven't even seen the movie, and it just like, it's a phrase that people say.
I didn't know it until last night, but None More Black is one of those bands. Will, when we hosted your show, Jim, we did an episode on good bands with horrible singers.
Yes.
But like, you know, yes. In a charming way, None More Black is one of those bands.
Yes.
Maybe I'll try to play a clip in here when I edit. It's gross and awesome.
Yes. But I still feel young. I've caught a bad infection. Amazing in slow motion.
But getting to the music, because Billy, you touched on this and a little bit too, that like, did you say like you didn't think the songs were very good, or
well, I kind of the songs You're not watching the movie because of the songs. You know, the songs play and they seem authentic enough, but I don't think they're good. I think McKean?
He's Lenny. This is where Billy is showing his young age because he was Lenny on Laverne and Shirley.
Well, no, it looks like it would be McKean.
The only thing, this is true, and I've talked about this on a previous episode, but for me, that guy, Michael McKean's, like, I think of Short Circuit 2. He plays Fred, the Short Circuit 2 guy. And I watched that movie. I was born in 83. Short Circuit 2 came out in, what, 90? 91?
We have no idea.
I don't know. Like, you know,
we didn't watch it.
Pre-adolescence. So I saw Short Circuit 2 500 times as a kid. And it was weird to see him in Spinal Tap. I was like, it's Fred.
Michael McKean has had a very... He has the kind of career I would like to have.
I don't know.
Because he's always in interesting stuff. He always seems to be having a good time. He's on Better Call Saul now, you know.
He's shockingly talented. I feel like he's really underrated.
And he's
really
married to the lovely Annette O'Toole, who I don't know if you know guys who know who that is, but she's lovely.
Short Circuit 2, 1988, by the way.
Mm. Okay, well, I'm glad we have that settled.
Thank God.
What I was trying to get at, though, is like the songs don't really matter. They're supposed to sort of be symbolic.
Well,
of you know, like there's that time when Nigel is like playing he's like, it's not Mozart. And it's not Bach, it's like Mach. It's and like he's playing this beautiful piano part. And Christopher Guest is playing that.
Of course he is.
It's good. It's charming, nice chords.
And then what?
What do you call it?
Yeah, well, it's part of a trilogy, really, a musical trilogy that I'm doing in D minor, which I always find is really the saddest of all keys, really. I don't know why, but it makes people weep instantly to play a... It's a horn part. It's very pretty. You know, just simple lines intertwining, you know, very much like I'm really influenced by Mozart and Bach, and it's sort of in between, though. It's really, it's like a Mach piece, really.
What do you call this?
Well, this piece is called Lick My Love Pump.
It's Lick My Love Pump, of course.
Lick My Love Pump.
That was fun.
Hard cut.
That was
it cuts right. Yeah.
That was a perfectly timed joke, don't you think? Uh-huh. He said it with such earnestness. That's what's so great about it.
None of
it was clearly improv, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his other mockumentaries, Billy, they're all improv, too, which works very well for a mockumentary because it gives it that loose feel of the actual thing.
Right.
One thing about the music is when they go, because you see Spinal Tap through clips through the years. So you see their like psychedelic period. You see their like very early early Beatles, early Stones, skiffle kind of period and all that. When David and Nigel were just like youngsters. And that's when you see like Eric Clapton on the drums and Ed Begley on the drums. Because they've had all their drummers have died in horrible accidents and stuff.
So I want to say, okay, so let me talk about the drummers real quick since you brought that up now too. Billy is a drummer. He was playing for me earlier and he's really good. But that's sort of a joke on the idea. This is true in rock music that like the drummer is sort of considered expendable in some way. You know, John Bonham aside, you know, Led Zeppelin actually stopped, you know, broke up when John Bonham died. But for a lot of bands, they'll cycle through drummers.
Sure.
And, you know, like the Ramones, for example. Mm-hmm. Will, your favorite band.
Oh, yes,
you know,
many.
There's sort of the feeling is we'll just burn out a drummer. We'll just hire another guy, right? And so normally that's how it works. They quit, they get fired, another guy comes in and replaces them. In this, of course, they die in tragic accidents. But it is a joke that's grounded in some kind of reality, right? That there's a lot of bands that cycle through a lot of drummers.
And it builds to that great moment at the end when they're finally triumphant and then they show the drummer and he just explodes on camera and then immediately a new drummer is in his place.
Well, but it cuts to the Japan show. It was a perfect cut, like mid-song.
Yes.
You know, I said Kevin last night, we were watching that thing and I was like, oh no. And then like, as I was kind of sputtering out, like my warning, the guy exploded. It's pretty well set up.
And then Joe Mama Besser or somebody comes in and it's...
Yeah, that's right. But let me address the music real quickly, because this was something I noticed watching it again last night, because I probably haven't seen it in quite a few years now. I was actually less impressed with the music watching it than I used to be. So here's my thing on this is I love the old clips. I love when they play, when they're the Thames men, mm-hmm. and they play Give Me Some Money. I thought that was like a perfect little like sort of British Invasion song, right? And it's kind of like snappy and fun, and you might actually listen to that just outside of the movie, right? And I think it's actually been used in things. I remember seeing it in a commercial once. Like, it's like that song is kind of taken on a little bit of a life. The Flower People, which was hilarious too, is sort of like their psychedelic era, uh-huh. right? And it's so perfectly done. But the song itself, I mean, it's funny. Listen to The Flower People, but it's not jokey so much. It's more sort of like witty in a way that it's reflecting right. sort of.
It's like they were the cashing in era, on every right? trend that went along.
Right. Yeah. The problem I have with the quote unquote metal music, it's really not that metal.
No, it's not.
Is that it gets too jokey. And like Big Bottom and what was
Sex
that?
Farm.
Like Sex Farm. And, you know, some of that, like, it's a little too jokey. And I think this is where the conclusion I came to is that I think it's they're trying to the whole idea of this band is that they're like one of these. You know, they're one of these heavy metal bands from Britain who were very, this is true for a lot of those kind of bands. They were very talented musically. Like those guys, unlike punk musicians, which was more of a DIY approach and you don't really have to know how to play or whatever. It's sure. like all about the emotion and the feeling and all that kind of stuff and just go out there and do it. Metal musicians actually take their craft very seriously and they're like really good and they're very
too seriously, kind of, I might argue, they're but kind
of,
yeah.
Right. They're kind of virtuosic in a way, mm-hmm. but they never, or they, I shouldn't say never, but they rarely took the songwriting so seriously, the lyrics and all that right. stuff. And that's where you get into kind of the mysticism or the overemphasis on sex and, you know, it gets into misogyny and all that kind of stuff. Right. And so I think that's what the joke is. Like, they're just kind of like writing these dumb songs. But I think it's hard to make a joke out of something that's kind of already a joke.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying. I think, I mean, what I think about the songs is I think they're, I mean, they are funny, but I almost think you need that. But I think like I think it's Sex Farm. They perfectly deploy when they're playing the Air Force base because they're like, it's yeah. Air Force, and then you just hear them singing about Sex Farm. And that's when you get Fred Willard's great little cameo in it.
Rest in power, Fred Willard.
I mean, he's perfectly, yes, rest in power, Fred Willard.
Is this your gentleman's first visit to a military facility?
Yes. Yeah.
Fine, may I start by saying how thrilled we are to have you here. We are such fans of your music and all of your records.
That's right.
I'm not speaking of yours personally, but the whole genre, the rock and roll, and so many of the exciting things that are happening in music today. And let me explain a bit about what's going on. This is our monthly at-ease weekend. It gives us a chance to kind of let down our hair, although I see you all have a head start on that. These haircuts wouldn't pass military muster, believe me. Although I shouldn't talk. My hair's getting a little shaggy, too. Better not get too close to you. They'll think I'm part of the band. I'm joking, of course. Shall we go in and I'll show you around?
They set that up well, too, because there's a, you know, he says everything we've done before was kind of immature and irresponsible, but now with Sex Farm, we've really hit the pinnacle of our writing abilities.
Yeah,
right.
We've
right.
finally written something that can be taken seriously.
And the movie, as a, you know, documentary, right, telling the story of this band, tells you that they were never like critically acclaimed.
Oh
right?
yeah,
they go through the whole thing on the reviews, which are just, you know, terrible and just abysmal, right? So they
shit sandwich.
You get So you get the idea right away that. They had an audience. They apparently were big at one point.
Right.
Who just liked this kind of like dumb rock and roll. Maybe that's sort of the Kiss comparison. Yeah. And that's fine. But eventually people get tired of that. It has no staying power.
Right.
You know, and so.
Well, but that's how they are, though. That band, they shift styles every few years. I mean, you see that the whole movie is how the band keeps adapting and. We're sort of at the point where they can't adapt anymore.
I guess. They just seemed smarter when they were younger.
They did. Which is a weird thing. There's a, I don't think this is, because I used to have the soundtrack album, which was black, like, you know, Smell the Glove. But there was a page that was supposedly torn out of a book called the Rocklopedia Britannica. And I can't remember if this joke is in the movie or if it's just on the album, but they have a line that I always thought was good where they said, Spinal Tap fills a much needed void. And I'm like, that's a good joke right there, because it takes you a second to be like, oh, yeah.
A much needed void.
Much needed void.
Yes, it's funny.
While I was watching this last night, I have one more little side that I think you'll think is funny, but I couldn't help but recast this movie. I don't know any of the characters. Like, I, you know, seriously, like, I don't know Christopher Guest. That's the first thing I've ever seen him in. I knew the other guy from Short Circuit. You know what I'm talking about? Like, to me, these people are disposable actors that I just don't know, versus you guys who have history, you know, who could name all the movies they're in. But I had a couple recasts for you that I think are going to work, and I would love to get your take. I thought Artie Lang would be great as the keyboardist. That guy looked just like him.
Yeah, he'd be better as a drummer, because I don't know if he's going to survive throughout.
Sure, but like, there's a couple scenes where like the keyboardist is just like zonked out.
Heck, I love Viv, what does he say?
I love that.
He has like one line.
Have a good time
all the time. That's his one line in the movie. Viv Savage,
Nigel.
Yeah.
Nigel looked a lot like Sam Rockwell to me.
Yeah, I can see that. I just watched Sam Rockwell in this Fosse and Verdon thing that was on Hulu. That guy's got talent, and he can dance.
Yeah, he's great.
He's great.
And then Paul Rudd is the bassist. I thought made perfect
with those big mutton choppy.
Yeah, like he's basically combine his characters from I Love You Man and Anchorman.
I Love You Man. That's a good movie.
It's a good movie
with a callback to Rush. We just said earlier.
Yeah. Yes. And then I could not come up with a singer replacement, which is why I thought I would leave that to you guys. Who should be the new Michael McKean?
I don't know.
It has to be somebody who's not very self-aware, who takes themselves incredibly seriously.
Visually, those guys are all on point. But the thing about Christopher Guest, Michael McKean, and Harry Shearer, the three main members, is, I mean, they essentially wrote the movie, too. They kind of, you know, they performed the whole,
Sure, they did. They definitely did.
But it's a...
I read, you know, and who's genuinely great. Who directed this? Rob Reiner. Rob Reiner is great. He plays a great straight man. He has a couple funny things that kind of reminded me of who's the famous director who is drunk all the time in the 70s on commercials?
Orson Welles.
Yes.
Orson Welles. He reminded me of like an Orson Welles type.
Well, now, Billy, this may shock you. Maybe it won't. But, you know, Rob Reiner got his start as an actor. He was best known as an actor for many years.
Well, but so speaking of this, though, the other thing that struck me in rewatching it, I kind of forgot that Rob Reiner sets up the movie. Like, he feels a need to sort of explain what this movie is at the beginning, because I think it was so different. Right. And so,
yeah, I agree.
It wasn't like, say, The Office, where it just.
You kind of knew, yeah.
You know, the show starts and boom, it's a mockumentary, right? He doesn't say, like, this is a mockumentary, but he
does say a rockumentary, if you will.
Yes, like he sets it up in a way that explains sort of like a little bit about like what you're about to see, as if it's real, of course, which it isn't. But I found that interesting. It goes on for about 5 minutes or so at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, he's good. Behind the camera, he does kind of... Yeah, I guess back then you really did need to sell it, because there was nothing else like this. And there's no narrator. You know, it's not like a documentary. And then Spinal Tap flew to Cleveland where they, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
They do show the title cards they burned in, the, you know, Boston. Or Boston got canceled, I'm sorry.
It's not a big college town.
That's one of my favorite... That's such a great line. It's not a big college town.
I think the next show after that they do is Chapel Hill. So
let's list the colleges in Boston. <That's right. laughs> I think that's the part too where Howard Hessman is the other rock star that blows him off. And he has this line where he says, I'd love to stay in chat, but I got to go stand in the lobby.
It's so funny you say this, Will. I'm holding up my notes for you to see. There's so many like funny lines that did not rise to the go to 11 thing. There's just little lines that in watching again, I started to jot some of them down. That was one of them about waiting in the lobby for the limo.
Listen, we'd love to stand around and chat, but we got to sit down in the lobby and wait for the limo.
Okay. Duke, we'll catch up with you on the road.
Great to see you
again,
Terry.
Yeah, cheers. Best of luck. Yeah.
Duke.
We'll catch up on the coast, maybe.
Great.
Great to see you.
See ya.
Good days.
See you,
good days.
Nice to see you.
The other one I really caught my attention was when Marty DeBurgi is doing a one-on-one interview with the manager Ian and talking about how they used to play like 15,000 seat arenas and now they're in like theaters or something like that, right? And Ian and he says this is, you know, indicative that they're losing their appeal, and Ian just says, no, their appeal is becoming more selective.
The last time Tap toured America, they were booked into 10,000-seat arenas and 15,000-seat venues. And it seems that now, on the current tour, they're being booked into 1,200-seat arenas, 1,500-seat arenas. And I was just wondering, does this mean the popularity of the group is waning?
Oh, no, not at all. I just think that their appeal is becoming more selective.
Yeah, that's a great line of BS. And one more, back when they're after...
This is the part of the show where we're going to just run through some quotes. Right. Just do it. It's great. Well, it's the one time.
After Howard Hessman blows them off too, they're like complaining about him and they're like, he was so bad when he opened for us, we had to apologize him. People were still booing during our show for his act. And
she's got this much talent.
We
had to apologize for him with our set.
That's right. Yeah.
People were still booing him when we were all
it's hard. It's all hard.
It's like they can't figure out that they were booing them. I think it's like it's residual booing or something.
I like when DeBurgi's interviewing the drummer in the bathtub,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, well, what would you do without this band? And he goes, well, there's still sex and drugs without the rock and roll, yeah. right? I'll be fine.
And doesn't he have a radio sitting on the edge of the tub?
He does.
Isn't there like, there's like a radio sitting right. there?
Because he's about to die in any death. Moment, right? But it didn't happen then. He also, we also mentioned that, go ahead.
No, I was going to say Derek's whole thing after the band crumbles with Jazz Odyssey. It's just like the worst pretentious, horrible, bore. And they just show the crowd. People hold, they're at the SeaWorld or whatever, and people just holding out their thumbs down.
And they also apparently had a side project that they wanted to work on about Jack
Saucy,
the Ripper.
Saucy right? Jack.
Musical theater. Saucy Jack, yes. That was funny. So the other thing that sort of struck me talking about the music and the movie too was that it was actually more sort of prog rock than I guess registered with me earlier, right? Obviously Stonehenge and then Rock and Roll Creation was another one that they did these sort of like rock opera kind of things, which was of course at the time that's something you could easily make fun of, right? Because there were so many bands to your point, Billy, that just took themselves so seriously, right? And that was the era of that. This was the era of just like incredible rock and roll excess, right? Bloated excess, right? And self-importance and all that. And I think coming out in 84, I think maybe it had more punch than it might have today because you don't have quite as much of that anymore. But there were just so many bands that were just so like, they made so much money because that's just what album sales did for you back then. And they just became so full of themselves and then in the process became so like clueless to how they came off, right? And that's ultimately the joke of the whole movie.
Yeah, the lack of self-awareness is the big joke.
Oh, sure.
And it's not just them though, it's everybody in the record label, to their managers, to the cabbie.
Oh, Bruno Kirby.
Oh, he was like funny.
if they had only like lived their life through the King or whatever, through
Sinatra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they closed the window up on him. No, that's okay. What I was going to say is, you know, one thing, and you can see exactly why they did this because they want you to like these characters and they want this to be a movie that everyone's going to enjoy. But they really, one thing they don't do is they don't get too much into sex or drugs. I mean, there's one scene where they all have
good
like
point.
Herpes. At the meet and greet party, they all have herpes on their lips, but they're never like, there's not like piles of cocaine everywhere. They're not like banging groupies. And it's, I mean,
I never saw the herpes joke. I missed that.
They
joke.
All have herpes sores on their lips at the party, like matching herpes sores. Yeah. All of them.
It's funny. It's very subtle. It's obviously, but it's funny. You kind of have to know what you're looking for.
Sure.
But that's a good point. Well, I didn't really think about that so much. They don't lean into sort of the sex and drugs and rock and roll stuff.
Yeah, it's not that kind of movie,
about,
you know.
No.
There's the one scene where they're all on a hotel bed and they all have like a woman wrapped around them, including the creepy keyboardist.
But I also read, I did not know this, but it makes sense now, of course, that they wrote the girlfriend plot into the movie so that it would have some kind of plot. There was the studio was quite worried that if they just made a mockumentary about a failing rock band, you know, rock band on the decline, that what, like, there has to be some thread, something that, you know, some arc, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where they came up with the idea of having David's girlfriend come in and sort of form this, you know, create this wedge between the band and the manager and take over the band, and then the band fails and it comes back, right? So it at least gave it something to hang on, right? Some story.
It's a great move too, because that's where you really get like the David and Nigel like friendship.
Right.
You know, you can see like the friendship is split and how they're hurt and this and that. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's studio note, but hey, good job studio for suggesting that one.
And I can tell you, there was actually one really, I thought, quite poignant scene that, again, sort of on a recent viewing struck a little differently with me, which was the scene where they are in the hotel and there's like an old song of theirs, Cups and Cakes, playing on the radio. And they go to listen to it or whatever. And then at the end of it, the
I know what you're
the DJ
say, yeah.
says, you know, that was the Thamesmen, and they later became Spinal Tap, and file them in the Where Are They Now, you know, drawer or whatever.
Right. And they're on tour. Yeah. It is kind of sad.
Right. It is kind of sad, right? Because everybody, it's that notion of glory days, right? Like, we're never going to get this back.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and I think if you're in any kind of like creative field, that can happen to you at any time.
Yeah, that sucks. That's a terrible feeling. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, it's like I've said, that moment at the end, first when they're going to go perform and Nigel says, like, have a good show. You know, he's all alone in the room and he's not going out with him. That scene at the end when David nods for him to come back out on stage, I'm always like, it's a great moment. Somehow this goofy ass movie has earned that moment.
I love that all of his gear is set up and ready to play. Kevin said that to me. He goes, it's nice that this guy hasn't been with them for a while and all their gear is sitting on stage and ready to go.
You gotta buy it. I mean, you really want to see a movie where he has to go set? Yeah.
I need to tune. The other really funny part was at one point I was kind of like looking at my phone or not quite paying attention. I hear Kevin go, "Do they all have basses right now?" And you look up and like the bassist is playing a double bass, but then both guitar players have basses too. It's just a bass song. It's kind of in your prog rock thing. You didn't catch that.
I didn't see.
I did not.
I didn't catch that one.
But I'm sure it was accurate, according to Christopher Guest. So.
That's a real moment.
Yes. I have a feeling Christopher Guest would not let that slip by.
I will say this. I'm looking at my notes. I will say this, going back to the music. There is one really witty line in one of the metal songs in Big Bottom where it says, "How could I leave this behind?" I do think.
Yeah, it's very good.
I do think that's pretty
funny. Yep, that's good.
That's a good pun. There was a video released for Hellhole that MTV played every now and then. Mm-hmm.
And was Hellhole actually in the movie?
You might hear it at some point.
I think so. Yeah, it's not a prominent song in the movie.
No. Yeah. I mean, because you don't hear all of the songs throughout the movie. Like, the soundtrack album has all of them, including the Thamesmen and Cups and Cakes and all that stuff.
Okay. And then one last thing you didn't even mention too is the backstage scene with the craft service.
Yes.
Right.
This little guy.
Which apparently is a joke on Van Halen and the brown M&Ms or whatever the thing is. Right. But apparently it's true for a lot of bands that they had, of course, crazy, you know, ridiculous requirements in their riders. And if those weren't upheld, they'd get upset over the smallest things, right?
Now, I heard in perhaps a bit of, I don't know if this was revision or truth, but the Van Halen put that in because they figured if they didn't meet that condition, they weren't going to meet more important conditions.
But that came out much later. At the time this movie was made, people just thought it was a ridiculous thing. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's tons of ridiculous stuff in those riders. I mean, you know.
That's right. And then, of course, the getting lost backstage apparently happened to a lot of bands I've read. So that's apparently
when
a true
thing.
When
they run into the janitor twice, that's just gold right there.
So this movie's rated R, and I don't know why.
Is it?
Yeah. There's, I guess, F-bombs? I mean,
yeah.
Is that it?
Language, I guess.
A few, but not... Not many, I don't
maybe
think.
The maybe the herpes sores.
No, you know what? I think the F-bombs are a lot more prominent than you think.
Yeah.
I never
like,
noticed
there's the one
stuff
time
like that,
they're
yeah.
visiting Elvis's grave, and he's like, please show some respect. Like, it happens a lot.
Too much fucking, yeah. Plus, when they describe the album cover, maybe that's it. You have a greased woman on her knees.
Maybe.
I don't know.
The 80s were a different time, Billy.
They were. Because you could see...
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely a PG-13.
There were PG movies with nudity back then. I mean, it was a crazy time for all of us.
I'll never forget you telling me that the woman at the beginning of Jaws is actually naked, but the quality of film was so bad back then that nobody could really tell. But now that we're in Blu-rays, when that lady at the beginning comes out, it's very clear she's not wearing any clothes. That's a Will anecdote.
Where you really see that is if you watch a lot of James Bond movies.
Oh, sure.
You watch James Bond movies now, like that showed on TV, and now you watch them on Blu-ray, and all the naked women in the opening credits, it could not be more obvious that they're nude.
So, Billy, did you like the movie? I don't think we got
it. I did. I didn't. I mean, I think that it's like a vestige of your guys' youth.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a previous generation's movie. I like this much better. The thing that kind of what's the punk movie with Emilio Estevez?
I was just going to ask that. Repo Man.
Oh yeah.
Repo Man. I feel like it's in the same lane as Repo Man, and this movie is way better. It's like it's a better made movie.
I think I would agree, but by the same lane you sort of mean this is a movie that guys my age watched obsessively and have a real love for. But when you come to it for the first time, you're like, it's fine.
No, I think Repo Man I thought was fine. I think this is better than fine. This is a good movie. I don't think it's like a holy shit outstanding movie. Like the poster is like the funniest rock movie of all time. I don't know. It's funny. I laughed and there are good jokes in it, and it's not stupid. You know, like there's a lot of stuff where you'll go back and watch a comedy now and I'll just be like, what the heck? Like it's just not funny. It's dumb. This isn't dumb. This is a really smart, sharp movie.
It is for sure.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And it's well produced, so when you're watching it, you're not punished for it being 40 years old. You know, it's like it looks like it's of its time, but it looks good. It looks appropriate. I think it's really good. It's a really good movie. I'm glad I watched it.
Do you guys think though that if you have to have some knowledge of the subject matter to find it funny, or do you think anybody would find it funny? Do you know what I mean? Do you have to have some knowledge of what rock stars are like?
Probably. You know, because we showed it to Allie. Just because I wanted to watch it. So, and she like laughed in parts, but parts of it she couldn't have cared less about because she has no interest in that world. I don't like a movie like Airplane.
Good for her.
Well, I know. Yeah. Believe me. If she's in other stupid crap, believe me, but it's not that stupid area. But, you know, a movie like Airplane, you don't need any special knowledge. Whether you like it or not, the jokes are just right there. But Spinal Tap, you do need to...
I've never seen Airplane. I don't know.
That's interesting, Billy. That's one I would be very curious to see what you think.
Well, it's funny you say that, Will, because, of course, Airplane is a parody of 70s disaster movies. But I think you're right. I don't think you have to have seen any of the source material to find it funny, because the jokes are just so, like, you know, just so obvious, right? They're just right there. And not to say they aren't funny, but that it's a different kind of humor.
There's a lot of subtlety to this movie, and I think if you miss it, it's okay. The movie, maybe that's why I found it a little boring, but it's like, it's not like everything falls flat because you didn't get the herpes joke, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But if you do get it, it's rewarding. There's a little bit of a bonus to it.
Just real quick, I would also say that back in 1984, this sort of thing was much more in the general consensus. Even if you weren't like a rock music fan, they were on TV. You know, you would be aware of who Led Zeppelin was, or that rock stars party and are crazy or stuff like that.
Yes. Yes, I think that's true. I think the definition of a rock star has changed since then. But back then, you know, a rock star was this person who led this completely different life from normal people, right? The thing I've noticed too, though, I think it's really tight. It's only like, is it even an hour and a half long?
It's 82 minutes.
Yeah, it's tight.
That's how I got Kevin to watch it with me last night.
I'm happy with that. I think they showed good restraint. They made it really tight. And there might be a couple of parts, I agree with you, Billy, there's a couple of parts where my mind wandered a little bit, but not too much. I found that just about every scene had good jokes in it. Like I guess what I would say is there was never like a scene where I was like, oh, that's that joke didn't work and that just fell flat or that was corny or whatever. That didn't really happen. They edited this very well and made it a tight little movie.
I think so, too. I think you're right.
On the DVD, there's tons of outtakes, and they were wise to take them out, you know?
And also, if you're ever in Kansas City, go check out a band called Four Jacks and a Jill. They play at they play at like the Ramada Inn Lounge or whatever
Fred.
It was.
He's so funny.
That's good. That's
He's
a good callback.
So funny.
Yes.
So I was going to ask if you have any final thoughts, but I kind of think we hit the final thoughts.
Yeah, right, I think so, too. There. I enjoyed it, and I will also say this is a rare occurrence where I can say to my wife of many years, I want to watch this old movie, and she says, yes, I want to watch it too. Like, that doesn't happen very often, because I think most of the stuff that I like from back in the day, she'd just roll her eyes to, but she was like, no, that's a funny movie. I want to watch that too. So I think that's good.
I started to tell my wife the anecdote about Kick 11, and she kind of gave me this, like, I don't want to hear about your glory days. I don't care. I was like, no, you're right. That's fine.
So you could relate to that scene with cups and cakes.
Yeah. Yep, that's right.
That's right. Billy is in the Where Are They Now file.
That's right. I'm here with you, Will. That's what
I know.
Me.
Hey, I'm here, there with you.
I wanted to thank, we got a couple donations over the quarantine. So I do want to thank folks for doing that. I'm not going to call people out by name, but I do appreciate you guys supporting the show. I know that when everything went on lockdown, everybody turned to podcasts, right? I mean, I've had some friends who said they turned to Netflix, but I think a lot more consumption happened since people aren't working. So we appreciate you supporting the show. We appreciate you sticking with us. We'll get back to the routine of reading reviews and sort of bringing the crowd in a bit more, but it's just nice, honestly, to get back on our feet here.
That's great. Get it going, man. Watch some more movies.
What do you want to do next week, Will? This is the rare time when we have not planned this.
That's right. We've had a couple movies in the slot. Do we want to try to watch, you want to do Ace in the Hole, or do you want to?
You know what? I've started that goddamn movie two different times. I hate that movie. I don't mean to spoil it. We'll get to it. But damn, I really.
Is there something you want to do?
I really want to do that thing you do at some point. We did promise that we would do that with Pat Francis, but I'll have to reach out to that guy. If not, maybe Jim would like to do it with us too.
Yeah, that's a good music movie.
Not to keep wasting your time, Jim. I don't mean to abuse your.
What do I have to do, Billy? I'm just here. I'm here all day, every day.
Exactly. He's just there.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I'm talking anyway. I might as well turn the microphone on.
we did promise that we'd get to it. So we should do Ace in the Hole, but let's kind of circle back and get to that thing you do in the next few weeks. And we'll try to get this out this weekend and then do Ace in the Hole next Monday.
Works with me.
Great.
Okay.
Well, if that's all we have to say, folks, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll miss you all most of all.
All right, my thanks to Will and Billy for having me on their show. It was a lot of fun. And as I mentioned yesterday, Peoples, if you liked what you heard from that, go check them out, outoftheaters.com. Of course, you can listen on any of the podcast platforms. You can find them on the social medias too. They talk about a lot of older movies, and they have a good time all the time. All right. Patrick and I have not broken up, by the way. We are not like David and Nigel. We will be back together next week. We'll talk to you then.